Before we hop into today's episode, a quick word from our sponsor. Get yourself out of the weeds. Operations, multiple systems, all just to deliver your product or service, are probably just cutting into your margin, not to mention your time. Plus, with expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing rising, everything costs more these days. So you can reduce your costs and headaches by just graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. You can reduce your IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, and you can access it from anywhere. Cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems. Go from many to just one. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have made the move. NetSuite is a proven way to cut costs and boost performance at the same time. And to me, that's a pretty smart move. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/SPI, netsuite.com/SPI. That's netsuite.com/SPI. Hey, we have an amazing event coming up, the Expert Advantage Workshop Series, where every day for a week, starting on Monday, May 20th, it's myself and another expert coming on to present to you about various kinds of things to help you with your brand and your business. Our brand new experts in residence and pro are going to be there to co-host these workshops with me, and you're not going to want to miss it. You'll have a chance to ask all of them questions, and it's completely free to join. All you have to do is go to smartpassiveincome.com/advantage. Wednesday, May 22nd, we're going to be talking trademarks, copyrights, how to know when to do it, what IP can you do it with, and the common pitfalls that most people fall into when it comes to intellectual property 101 with Yasmin Salman Hamdan. And you're not going to want to miss that on Wednesday, May 22nd. And then finally, to finish off the expert week on Thursday, May 23rd, we're going to be talking with Pamela Slim about how to monetize and scale your IP and position it and package it in a way that is unlike anything you've really been taught before. Incredible value from Pamela and all of our experts on our Expert Advantage Week. And all you have to do to sign up and join and get all the links that you need is smartpassiveincome.com/advantage. Again, one more time, smartpassiveincome.com/advantage. Join us on our Expert Advantage Workshop Series. You're not gonna wanna miss it. Again, smartpassiveincome.com/advantage. This is the Smart Passive Income Podcast with Pat Flynn, session number 83. Drop the beat.
Welcome to the Smart Passive Income Podcast, where it's all about working hard now so you can sit back and reap the benefits later. And now your host, his blood type is, oh yeah, Pat Flynn.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for great talent, match with them, thanks to Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data. Plus, their matching engine helps you find quality candidates fast. You can ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employees agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. I love how simple Indeed is, and it manages everything. Again, all in one place, from the screenings to the messagings, interviewing. You can do it all from Indeed, which makes it super easy to hire the right person that you need. So join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/smartpassive. Just go to Indeed.com/smartpassive right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/smartpassive. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Hey, what up? This is Pat Flynn, and welcome to session 83 of the Smart Passive Income Podcast. And this one is a great one because it features all questions from you, the listener. I have a SpeakPipe page. That's a page that you can go to at speakpipe.com/patflynn, and you can leave me a voicemail. And every once in a while, I like to put these voicemails into a podcast episode and answer people's questions. Now, SpeakPipe is an awesome tool. They aren't the official sponsor of this particular podcast. Actually, I don't have any sponsors for the podcast, but if I were to have one for this particular episode, it would be SpeakPipe. And I actually do have an affiliate program for SpeakPipe. So if you ever are podcasting or feel the need to collect voicemails from your audience, which is a great way to engage with them and a great way to answer their questions, I would go to, if I were you and you wanted to help me out, you can go to speakpipe.com or no, excuse me, you can go to smartpassiveincome.com/speakpipe, S-P-E-A-K-P-I-P-E. That's smartpassiveincome.com/speakpipe. And I do want to earn a small commission if you go through there and, you know, tack onto one of their plans. It's a great tool, and I just can't recommend it enough. So these are SpeakPipe voicemails coming directly from you, and there are a number of them here. So I'm not even going to dilly-dally here with any sort of intro, what's been going on, except for the fact that I've had the hiccups for quite a while. They just ended 2 days ago, which is why this podcast is a little late. So if you were waiting for this podcast to come up midweek, I apologize. It's Saturday when this is going live right now. But the reason is because I had the hiccups for 5 days after coming back from a trip, and I had to go get medical attention for it. So I wasn't able to record an episode because I'm not going to edit every 7 seconds of an episode out. As all of you know, I don't edit these episodes besides the intros and outros or any sort of really big mishaps that happen in the middle of them, or swearing, of course, if that happens. But yeah, so anyway, that's my excuse. And let's get right to the voicemails. This is the first one from Jared from Australia. Let's have a listen.
Hi, Pat. It's Jared here from Australia. Thanks heaps for producing your podcast. It's the most valuable thing across the course of my week. I'm always learning something from it, and I absolutely credit you for every success that I've been able to have in recent years. So my question is to do with newsletter lists, and through a lot of your help, I've been able to grow my newsletter list, and I'm very conscious about the things I send, and that's, again, thanks to yourself. However, there are people on my list that would be considered inactive, and my question relates to those people and whether it's worthwhile effectively cutting losses with them and maybe deleting them from the mailing list, or is it worthwhile maybe segmenting them onto a separate list and effectively having that as an inactive list and trying different means to engage that particular audience with, let's say, you know, a special deal or a welcome back type style, or with missed you style email. So, what sort of advice do you have? Should I delete them, or should I go down the lines of trying to engage them perhaps one more time before I then eventually give them the chop? Thanks heaps, and I look forward to continually being inspired by the work that you do.
All right, Jared, thank you for the question. So it's a great question, actually, and something that I haven't really addressed before. Now, before I move on to answering the question, a lot of you will notice that these voicemails come at varying degrees of quality. And as you can see, Jared was probably in his car or somewhere in a noisy environment when he was recording that. So, you know, I'm not going to apologize for that, because that's just the way it is. I mean, so, you know, if you can't understand what the question is, I'm going to always sort of paraphrase what the person might have said or asked to make it easier for everybody. But I do want to give people a chance to speak up. And, you know, a lot of these questions are great, like this one here from Jared, talking about email lists. And, you know, when you collect email lists or when you collect emails and build your subscriber base, it's always good to purge your list every once in a while. And the reason why you would do that, the reason why you would want to delete people off your list, is because you want those inactive people, like Jared was saying, to not be on your list. There's no reason for them to be there because, I mean, first and foremost, you're paying for those subscribers. Depending on what email service provider you have, you are paying money for having, you know, the more people you have on your list, the more money you're going to actually end up paying for them. And you want to delete the ones that are inactive. And also another reason is because a lot of times when you send out emails and you look at your stats as far as open rates and click-through rates, you know, the people who are inactive are just throwing that number way off. And so you might as well do what you can to get rid of them. Now, there are a lot of things you could do to clean up your list. And the first thing you can do to do some spring cleaning is to get rid of any email addresses that have bounced. I'm not going to go into technically how to do that, but bouncing means you are sending emails to emails that don't exist. And so you want to segment your list to see which emails have bounced and then just delete all those email addresses. And that's going to save you a lot of money really quickly. I get a number of bounces every single time, and I make sure to go in after each time I send a broadcast to delete those people who have bounced because for whatever reason, their email address doesn't work anymore and I don't want to pay for them, obviously. Now, another thing you could do is get rid of the people who have already unsubscribed. Now, what I mean is when you have a list in AWeber and you send out broadcasts or whatever, for whatever reason people choose to unsubscribe, those unsubscribe email addresses are saved in AWeber. And guess what? You're actually paying for those people who have unsubscribed to hold on to their email address. Even though you don't get to send them emails anymore because they've chosen to unsubscribe, you're still paying for that list. So you want to clean those up as well. And you can see those in AWeber right there. It says with every list that you own, it says how many people are subscribed and how many people have unsubscribed. That number of unsubscribed people you are paying for. So what you'll want to do is you'll want to go into your subscribers section, pull up a list of those people who have unsubscribed, and you want to delete those right away as well. That alone has saved me hundreds of dollars over the course of a couple of years. So make sure you do that. Now, another thing you could do is to get rid of any email addresses that are from role accounts, meaning email addresses like sales at whatever or support at, info at, reply at, and you can set up and segment your list based off of those different sort of pre-email address parts. These are email addresses that people use to basically subscribe to your list to get whatever giveaway you have and then to make sure they don't hear from you again, basically. They're like almost junk email addresses. Junk at is another one that you could put in there. So those you can clean up as well. Now, as far as cleaning up your email list beyond what we've talked about already, there are sort of two approaches that you can take. You can go into your email service provider. Many of them, including AWeber, will let you segment your list. And this goes along what Jared was talking about. You can segment your list. Find those people who haven't opened an email that you've sent since whatever date you choose, maybe up to 6 months ago, for example. And before you delete them, you want to segment that list and send them one last email. You can do that. You can send any segment of your email list. This time you're basing it off of when the last email was opened. You'll want to send one more email address with a subject line that catches their attention. Something like, you know, this is your subject line. I'm deleting your email from my list unless dot, dot, dot. And the point of this is to give those people who haven't opened your list for X number of days or months one last chance to say, okay, sorry, yes, I'm here, I'll listen. And you can choose to do that if you want, and you know, to give them that last chance. Or you can just delete all those who haven't, you know, opened your email in the last 6 months. But, you know, it's really up to you. But that'll give you an idea of, okay, maybe there's a few low-hanging fruit that are still there who just didn't feel the need to open your email address anymore. And then in the future, they will open your emails. But that's one way to approach it without pinging those who are active and legit subscribers. That's the benefit of doing it this way. Or you can do it this way. You can do what I've seen a lot of other people do on lists that I'm actually subscribed to. Sometimes I get emails from lists that I'm on that say, "Hi, Pat, I'm doing some spring cleaning on my email list and want to make sure that the list only comprises of people who are active and want the high quality information that I'm providing," or, you know, something of that sort. And then you say, if you want to continue to get emails from me, take this particular action. And that action might be clicking a button to, you know, subscribe to another list, or it might automatically do that for them. Again, I'm not going to get into technically how to do that, but you can do that. You can put people onto different lists. And so you're essentially creating an entirely new list of active people who have re-given you permission to contact them. And if I were to do this, I would resend that same email to people who haven't opened it the first time a few days later just to make sure they got it. And then boom, that brand new list that you have, that becomes your main list. And that's nearly 100% active. Now, I will say that this method will cut down your email list drastically, the overall number of people who are subscribed to your email list. But think about it. What kind of email list do you want? Do you want an email list of 100,000 people, but only 1,000 are active, which you would be paying for a lot of inactive subscribers? Or do you want an email list of 1,000 people and all of them are active? Same amount of people active, you're just saving a lot more money. And the metrics will be much better too. So hopefully that makes sense and is helpful to you. Okay, next question. Let's get to Brad Powers, who has a 3-hour commute to San Diego every day, apparently. So let's hear from Brad.
Hi, Pat. My name's Brad, and I started listening to your podcast a couple of months ago, which actually led me to start my first website about 6 weeks ago. And I've learned so much since then about keyword research, and I'm almost caught up actually on your podcast now. But now that I've gotten this far, I'm actually concerned that since I didn't know anything at the time, I went about this website the wrong way, and perhaps I picked an overly competitive niche with some maybe ill-defined keywords. Anyway, I know that 6 weeks is nothing. I know that, and I'm prepared to give it way more time, spending some time rounding out the content, doing some marketing finally. And I'm not one to give up easily, and I'm trying to stay positive. But I'm also trying to be laser focused and not start something else before I run this course. Plus, as you've said, there's a lot of value even in failing. But like so many others, I don't have tons of extra time for this. I have a wife, three kids, and a 3-hour round trip commute every day down to San Diego, actually. And I continue to invest some time, tons of time, my precious spare time, and even some money into this. So I guess my question to you is, can you provide a little information about maybe one of your failed projects, and when and how did you realize that it was time to finally throw in the towel on that? Thanks so much.
Wow, Brad, thanks for your question. It's a great one. And honestly, I don't even know where to begin because I have a ton of failed projects. And hopefully that makes you feel better, because I think, you know, part of the entrepreneurial journey is going through those failures. And like you said, they are all there to help you learn what to do next or what not to do the next time. And I also like how you said, you know, you also want to be laser focused and make sure you're working on something that you know is actually going to go somewhere. So talking about one of my failures, I mean, let me just start with one of the first things I did after my very first successful website, which was, of course, Green Exam Academy. The next thing I did after that wasn't actually Smart Passive Income. It was another site that I wanted to create called acoupleofthoughts.com. It no longer exists, but it was a website that I created to co-author with my wife. And we would both, you know, with the success of Green Exam Academy, I discovered how powerful a blog was for reaching an audience and delivering a message and sharing information. My wife and I, you know, got on the idea of creating our own blog together, sort of a couple's blog, because we were going to get married soon. And we wanted to share our experience and then talk about different topics from a male perspective, which is from me, obviously, and then a female perspective, which is my wife. And so that site was called A Couple of Thoughts. And we thought that was a pretty cool name. But I built the site, I created the framework, I had someone custom build the theme to create it sort of a side-by-side homepage, and with her perspective on one and mine on the other, and then a central topic in the middle that was sort of the topic of discussion for that day or the week or whatever. And we just started writing, and we just lost energy, and it failed. And I had spent, you know, a good amount of money on creating that and a good amount of energy put forth into building that idea. And once we started writing, we found out that we just didn't enjoy the process. I mean, it was really hard for us to both write about a certain topic and have it be funny and interesting without getting into a fight, you know, these types of things. That project just failed. We just I don't want to say we gave up on it, but we just ended it early because it just wasn't fitting in our lifestyle, and it just wasn't something that we wanted to do. Now, another project that we ended up doing, or not that we, my wife and I, but that I ended up doing that failed was, let's see, which one should I choose? Well, a lot of people know about the WordPress plugins that I tried building. I tried to create 2 WordPress plugins that were based off of needs that I had as a blogger, and I'd spent about $4,000 hiring a developer to create 2 different plugins, and they were not built the way I wanted it to. And even after spending even more money to get one of the plugins built the way I wanted it to, I was not happy with the end result. It just wasn't something that other people were going to use. It was something that I could have used, but when I actually built those plugins and tried to share them with friends and talk about them with people, they weren't anything that anyone else was interested in. And so that was a big lesson for me, because I learned that I was doing something that, you know, if I initially did some research, I would have really and quickly, easily understood that those are things that I probably didn't have to waste my time doing. Now, I will say that in your situation, you know, you're a beginner blogger, you created something and have 6 weeks into it, which is great. It's fantastic. You took action. So really, really big kudos for you. But it's also great that you're sort of maybe not questioning what you're doing, but sort of just wanting to validate your path that you're going down to make sure that you're going to put in more effort in the right space. And I think the most important thing I could tell you and anybody out there who's in that beginner position is, you, before you give up on anything or feel like you might be doing something you're not supposed to do, you need to talk about it with other people. And so my recommendation to you, Brad, is to go out there and ask people, you know, like me or anybody else out there who might help you, if they think you should continue to go down that path too, because you definitely don't want to stop early, but you also want the advice from people who have done this before, not even in the particular niche that you're in, but anyone just who has experience, or just to get that sort of third party, other set of eyes on it to sort of gauge it. And if you get an overwhelming response of like, yeah, this is awesome, you just got to keep going for it, then you'll know, you'll have validation from your friends and family and coworkers and colleagues, that this is something you should do. And if you get sort of a reaction that's sort of mixed or sort of on the negative side, like, oh, well, I could see why you're starting to get these feelings and why you might think it's a keyword that you might not have initially should have chosen, then that's validation for your thoughts. And it's not just you and your, because the thing is, when we work on these projects ourselves, we get so into them, we start to sort of psych ourselves out, both in the positive and both in the positive and the negative. And what I mean by that is, in the negative, like you, like sometimes we might be so deep into a project, we might just be frustrated with it. We might not see how cool it is from the outside because we're so deep into it and we're actually working on it. But in the positive side, we are so deep into our projects that we don't see the reality sometimes, that, you know, because we're so deep into it, we are so, so excited, and we forget about the logistics of things or what things might look like from the outside that we might be missing because we're so involved. So it's really important to get other people's opinions on it, and that would be my best advice for you. And Brad, if you wanted to send me an email sometime just through my contact form on Smart Passive Income, I'd love to give you my opinion on it and see if it's something, or at least give you advice on what I feel is, if it's something that you should continue to do or maybe take a different angle with it. And, you know, 6 weeks into it, if you're feeling like this and you want validation, that's a great sign, because you are asking all the right questions, and I would just keep doing what you're doing and working toward that. Because all of this, even if this project were to fail and drop and you finally realize that this is something that you shouldn't have been doing, it is a learning experience, like you said, and you can pivot and laser focus on something else in the future. So hopefully that helps you, Brad, and anyone else out there who is in that position. Okay, the next voicemail we have is from Dana. Dana, take it away.
Hi, Pat. It's Dana Ryan from DiaperDirt.com. And first, I just wanted to say thank you, because a year ago, I did not have my website. And after stumbling upon your podcast, I now have a website, a YouTube channel, and a podcast. So my question for you is about meetups. I know that you do a lot of meetups, and I would like to host some for my community, and I'm not really sure how to go about it. So if you have a meetup in a restaurant, do you pay for everybody who comes to the restaurant, or do you charge them to come? Also, do you just create an event on Facebook for everyone to join up there and to hear about it? I have a small budget because I am just starting out, so I was hoping you had some tips on how to organize a meetup and also maybe some etiquette during the meetup. Thank you so much for everything you do and for inspiring me, Pat. Bye.
Dana, thank you so much for the question, and I love this question because I love doing meetups, and I'll talk about exactly what that means in just a second for those of you who might be wondering what a meetup is. But before I get to that, Dana, I just want to say, seriously, congratulations and thank you for taking action. I mean, in a year, you have your website up, a YouTube channel, and a podcast, and guess what happens? You are at a point now where you can bring your community together physically, together in person, and have a meetup, which I think is so cool. So thank you for that. Hopefully that inspires a lot of you out there. So cool. Thank you. Now, in regards to meetups, now what are they? For those of you who might be like, well, what's a meetup? A meetup is something that you set up where you bring people in your community together to just to hang out, and it could be really for anything. I mean, it's what it is. It's a meetup. You're all meeting up together. And typically it's done in a place with food and a place where you can mingle and talk. And I've held at least a dozen meetups in the past, and they are one of my favorite things to do, just to go to a place. And I typically hold meetups in cities where I'm speaking, and to bring the SPI community together, those people who listen to the podcast or who read the blog or who watch the YouTube channel, to bring those people together in one central place, who are all like-minded people, of course, because they're all part of the same community. It's just, you know, magic happens, and it's not just for me to see who my fans are and talk to them and meet them. You know, it's not anything. It's not like I'm creating an event to become a celebrity and feel good about myself at. You know, that's not what this is about. This is about bringing the community together and creating these amazing connections between people in your community. I mean, I've gone to meetups before where I've held meetups before where a day or two later I'll hear back from a number of people who say, I think I just met my new business partner, or I've gotten so much motivation from the person that I spoke to last night. I mean, it's not about me. It's about the community. I'm just there and I'm the organizer. And if you all remember Noah Kagan from, I think it was SPI podcast episode 72, and another one of the top three podcasts that I've created so far as downloads are concerned and comments, he said in his episode that he increased his own authority when building his name and his brands by setting up meetups or conferences, you know, bringing people together. And if you can become the person that brings people together, you become at that higher authority level. And so that's something that happens as a result of creating these meetups, and then all these connections that are made. And seriously, there's nothing like it. I mean, from my perspective, as someone who holds these events every once in a while, and that, you know, they're not super formal. They're not like events with signs or, you know, yeah, I don't have people come and scan their tickets or anything, but, you know, people show up and I meet them and we talk, and we talk business, we talk personal, we talk whatever we want to talk about. It's just a hangout, fun thing to do. And a lot of the talking is not between myself and other people. It's between everybody else who shows up together. And like I said, magic happens when you bring your community together, especially in physical places, and there's food and sometimes there's drinks involved, of course. And, it's a good time. It's really, really a good time. So to answer your question, Dana, as far as technically how to do this, how to set it up and payments and budgeting and etiquette and things like that, let's get into that because it's really interesting stuff. So my very first meetup I remember doing, I set up as a Facebook event, and that's a great free way to do it. Everybody's on Facebook, it seems, so it's a great way to set it up, and you can send reminders and things like that. You can get the community together and talking to each other in there as well to get them all hyped up for whatever the meetup is going to be and where it's going to be at. And that's a great thing to do. But I like doing these meetups, or more recently I've been doing them via Eventbrite, E-V-E-N-T. Excuse me, I'm still getting over that cold. E-V-E-N-T, hopefully that doesn't ruin your ears for those of you listening. Eventbrite.com. And it's a site where you can go to create an event. And, you know, there are other sites out there which I've been experimenting with. TicketBud is another one. TicketBud, BUD.com is another good one. They have a flat fee of $99 per event. And if you're doing a bigger event where you're going to charge, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars to attend, I would recommend TicketBud. I've been using it. It's been doing really well so far for me for some of the things I'm doing early next year. But for these smaller events, you know, Eventbrite is good. They do take a small percentage. I think it's 5% of the fees if you are charging for the event. But I like it because it makes the event seem more official. You know, people sign up and they get, you know, tickets. And even though I don't require people to bring them, and I say that in the description, you don't need to bring your ticket, but they get tickets. You know, how official does that feel? And it's something that they're less likely to miss, I feel. You know, on Facebook, it's sort of more casual. Oh, yeah, Pat's holding this event here this day. Maybe I'll go. Maybe I won't. With Eventbrite, you can set a limit to the number of people who go. So if you're renting out space in a restaurant, you can cap it to that limit of the space that you've rented out. And it just seems more official. Yeah, Pat's event is this day. I got a ticket for it. I'm getting email reminders from him, which you could do on Eventbrite. So it's a great channel or platform to set up these events for. And again, it looks more official. The map is there and everything. Do I pay for them, for the people who attend, or do I charge them to come? So if this is like at a restaurant or some, you know, it doesn't have to be at a restaurant. It could be anywhere. It could be at a museum, or it could be at a park. And, you know, it could be whatever you want it to be. It could be a bringer. It could be a potluck style thing. I mean, that would be actually really cool to do one day. But typically what I do is when I go to speak at a city, I hold a meetup for between 40 and 50 people. It's been growing each time.
Initially, it was like 20 people. And I have it at a restaurant. And sometimes I pay for everyone at the end and sometimes I don't. And you know, I say that on the description of these events. But, you know, Eventbrite collects the money and it will pay that out to you as well. What I do now, either way, I always collect $5. And you'll notice that if you've signed up for any of my meetups, I collect $5. And the reason I do that is because I want people to commit a little bit of money. And that money I typically gather and give to a tip to the people who are at the restaurant, the waiter or waitresses. I will give that money as a tip. But the reason I charge $5, whether I end up paying for everyone or not, is because I want people to commit to going. You know, if I say it's free, that people are more likely to not come. You know, and people who sign up and not come take a space of someone who probably would have come. So that's why I do that. So that's how I handle the payments and things like that. And you know, as far as budget's concerned, you'll and even setting this up, even before you create the event page, you'll want to find a space. You know, you want to find a space that has a the ability to cater to the number of people that you want. And again, it's totally up to you. And so I typically have, you know, I call restaurants and see if they have any private rooms. Those are typically better than having, you know, sharing a dining room. You know, if they have a private room, that's great because it's a separate space. It feels more official and you can have your own little area to mingle and talk about. And it just feels good to have everybody in your community in one space instead of like spread out in one giant room or, you know, separate tables all throughout the room. You all want to be together in one spot. And you'll want to ask for a quote for X number of people from that restaurant. And, you know, typically you'll get different menus. And sometimes they'll say, oh, well, you for $20 a person, you get this. For $15 a person, you get this. For $10 a person, you only get this. So again, you'll have to work that out. Depends on which restaurant and or company you go with. But as far as etiquette is concerned, and this is one thing I had to learn, you know, and it almost feels like a wedding, to be honest. And if you've ever been married and gone to a wedding, especially one with a large amount of attendees, and my wedding was 150 people, I was bouncing from table to table with my wife, you know, taking pictures and talking to everyone for a few seconds here and there. Now, when you have a meetup in a couple hours and you're in a room together, you're going to get more than a couple seconds with each person, of course, but you want to make sure that you don't just stick to one or two people the whole time and everybody else who showed up to see you or to hang out because you set it up, they don't get a chance to speak to you. You want to make sure everyone gets a chance. When people show up, you definitely want to greet them and make them feel special for being there and thank them and introduce them to everybody else around there. I think that's really important. Don't just say, oh, hey, Joan, thanks for coming. Enjoy yourself. No. Hey, Joan, thanks for coming. Hey, have you met Tom? He's doing this. Maybe you guys can have some connection there or something to talk about. And, you know, just to make sure that, you know, nobody's sitting alone. And if I ever go to a meetup and I'm talking and I scan the room a little bit and people are sitting alone, I'll typically sit down next to that person. excuse me. And now that I say that, a lot of you might want to sit alone to make sure I notice that and spend time with you. But no, I'm going to spend time with you no matter what. And I, you know, it takes some practice and it'll take a little bit of feeling what the vibe is like. But, you know, you just go around, have fun and talk to people and make it just a fun little thing. You know, I never like, you know, I never like go on stage and present anything. It's just a casual meetup, you know, and everyone has fun and go around. You know, I typically go around to a group of people who are talking and chat with them for a little bit and make sure I try and remember everybody's name and get involved in the conversation that they're in. And then I'll say, excuse me, I gotta go and see what everyone else is up to. And everyone is typically pretty understanding about that. And I'll go to the next group and sit down and just come in and do that and go from group to group. And that's how it is. I mean, it's so much fun, Dana. And I would love to get a voicemail back from you in the future after you set up your first meetup to see how it went after you set one of these up. And if you ever come to one of my meetups, any of you listening, I can't wait to see you there. I'm actually doing two in St. Louis coming up in the next couple weeks for FinCon, for the Financial Bloggers Conference. And I'm doing another one in Scottsdale, Arizona with Amy Porterfield. That's sold out just recently. 40 people are coming to that one. And that's another thing, you know, doing a co-hosting a meetup with other people in your industry is a great thing to do. You know, I've co-hosted meetups with Chris Ducker, Cliff Ravenscraft, and now I'm doing this one with Amy Porterfield. I mean, if you wanted to split the cost for the restaurant, if you both decide to to get the bill for the group. I mean, it's less cost to each of you, and you each are there and helping people out and bringing the communities together. You know, you should, it's awesome. It's awesome. It's such a fun thing to do. I hope those of you who have communities and who are traveling, maybe doing public speaking, you know, that's a great opportunity for you to just meet up with people. And even if it's like two people, even if it's one person, it's so valuable. And you know, if you wanted to, and I do this often, I always ask people that I meet at meetups, well, what's something I can improve on? Or what do you think I should do better? Or what sort of direction would you like SPI to go? Or, you know, things like that, to try to get as much information I can directly from my community, the community who I'm serving, to figure out what I can do to serve them better. So hopefully Dana and everyone else out there, you take that info and use it to your advantage. Man, now I'm like totally excited for these meetups that are coming up. I love doing meetups. Anyway, moving on to the next question. This question comes from Shane. Shane, let's hear it.
Hey, Pat. My name is Shane, and I just have a quick question about your lifestyle, if you don't mind sharing. I'm just kind of curious about what your average day looks like, how many hours you spend working, where you work from, if you're able to get the vacations you're hoping to have, just so that we can all kind of picture and look forward to the freedom that we're hoping to have given multiple income streams as you show us how to do. That's pretty much it. Thank you for everything that you do, and look forward to your response.
Hey, Shane, thank you for the question. And this is something I actually talk about every once in a while. You know, a lot of people ask me, well, what my typical day is like. And I actually have a post up on SPI that goes through a typical day in the life of Pat Flynn. But, you know, things change. And I don't remember exactly when I wrote that, but it was a long time ago. And in a work from home environment with two kids, two growing kids, those things change. So I don't mind answering this question again. And I will say, even before I start, you know, you had mentioned, you know, what you have to look forward to based on my answer. And I would just say, you know, this is the way that I want to live, you know, and you'll see exactly what sort of motivates me throughout the day. But what motivates you and what would be your perfect day is totally up to you. And so you have to design the lifestyle that you want to live. I don't want anyone to design the lifestyle that I live, unless that's something that they want to do too. Multiple income streams, passive income, it gives you opportunity to customize and be flexible with your lifestyle to make it the way that you want, or that your family and those around you and those who are important to you, that you can all want together. So I just wanted to mention that. Now, my typical day, and this is a day where I don't have any upcoming projects due, because when I have an upcoming project, and this is part of this whole process and part of my lifestyle, when I have a project due, for instance, when I had Breakthrough Blogging was coming out, or when Food Trucker was needed to be done, you know, I will spend more time working right leading up to those deadlines. In a normal day, it's working on projects, you know, just chugging along and moving forward when I do spend time working during the day. But when those deadlines are coming up, that's when I go full work mode, and I will spend, you know, typically, I don't know, 12 hours a day working, but just for short periods of time, perhaps maybe just a week. And it's during those times that it's really important that I'm communicating with the people around me, with my kids, with my wife, to let them know about these projects and deadlines that are coming up, because it's really important that I put in the work now so that we can reap the benefits later. And that's the cue for my wife and my kids to know, or mostly my wife, to know that she's going to be spending a little bit more time with the kids. And that's why I love my wife, and she's amazing because she fully supports me. And although she's a work-at-home mom, she has the hardest job in the world, and not only does she take care of the kids, but she is very adaptable to what I need to do for the business as well. So I just wanted to mention that. But a typical day is, you know, and now my son's at the point where he's waking up before me, or before my wife too, and crawling into our bed and waking us up. So that's really what starts the day. My son will wake up and open the door and crawl into bed and say, "Daddy, Daddy, I want breakfast." And so he'll wake me up and go down. I let my wife sleep in. Again, like I said, she deserves that because she stays up late after the kids are asleep and gets her work done, which is work done around the house. For me, when the kids go to sleep around 8, 10:30 p.m. at night. That's when I start my work. So you'll see during this sort of daily schedule, again, for a regular day, that I don't actually start my real work until the evening when the kids are asleep. Excuse me. So I'll wake up with the kids. I'll cook them breakfast. My daughter now is at the point where she's eating regular food now too, not baby food anymore. So I can cook a breakfast for both kids and feed a little bit to my daughter, feed a little bit to my son, feed a little bit to myself. We typically play in the playroom, or we read, or we build forts, or, you know, all this fun stuff, whatever my son wants to do, we do. Sometimes we'll watch a little bit of TV. There's some shows on the Disney Channel that I love, like Octonauts and Special Agent Oso, and other ones that I enjoy, because not only are they actually fun for Kaoni and they're very educational, but, you know, they're actually pretty entertaining for me as well. And I'm a big kid too, so I like watching Disney Junior. Sophia the First isn't actually that bad either, even though it's typically for girls. It's actually a good show. Anyway, so after that, you know, my wife will wake up around 9:30 or 10, and we'll all hang out together as a family. I'll cook lunch, or we'll go out to lunch sometimes. And then around 1 p.m. is when my wife starts to get into putting the kids into nap mode. And that's when I start to get into afternoon work mode. And I'm putting air quotes there, because it's not really work, but it's the work that I can only do in the afternoon. Typically, they are things like interviews and, you know, anything that involves other people, because I don't want to have to interact with people who I need to talk to, or if I get on the phone, I don't want to have to do that after the kids go to sleep, because that's really late. So I save those things, the things that I can only do during the day, between the sort of 1 and 3 p.m. time period. And so I'll do a little bit of work then. A lot of times you'll see me on social media around that time, if you were on Twitter and Facebook, because that's when I do that. And then if I have any spare time, that's when I get into my email inbox too, just to sort of start to get into work mode and start to do stuff related to work to get ready for the evening. But after the 3 p.m. period, that's when we get together as a family again, and we either go somewhere, or we get any sort of groceries done. You know, that's a perfect time of day if you're working from home to get stuff done in your community, because everybody's typically at work and there is no challenge getting a parking spot. There's no lines at Target. You know, it's perfect. And so I'll save a lot of time that way instead of doing those things on the weekend. Man, my voice is starting to go here. I'll probably try to answer one or two more questions just to make sure I get through as many as I can, because we're already at the 38-minute mark exactly. But, gosh, sorry. But after that, we'll have dinner together. I'm trying to work toward cooking more dinners at home instead of going out to dinner, to not only save money, but it's just healthier that way. And even though I will end up spending a little bit more money on healthy foods at the grocery store, it's worth it to me to cook dinners at home and to be together around the dining table together as a family, now that we're all almost old enough to do that now. Excuse me. And then, okay, fast forwarding down to when the kids go down, you know, we'll read them books to bed. And then that's when I get into work mode. And I know during the day, sort of the first things I want to do when I get into work mode. And I love this schedule, because at night, the kids are asleep, no distractions. I close the door to my office and my brain just knows to go right into work mode. And it's super productive during that time, between the hours of 8:30 p.m. and about 1 a.m. And I'll take breaks every hour for 15 minutes. I'll talk to my wife and see how she's doing and help out around the house if I have to. A lot of times I love to do the dishes, because I don't know if you remember from a previous podcast episode, a strategy that has worked out really well for me is doing the dishes before getting into work mode. And so a lot of times after I put the kids down to sleep, I'll go do the dishes and then go to work. And it works really well as a transition between sort of personal life and work life. And I actually shared that strategy in a recent podcast episode, and I've gotten a number of tweets and emails from people who have said, wow, I thought that was the dumbest idea I ever heard, but it is the best idea I've ever done. And so go try that out for yourself if you haven't already, or if you thought that was stupid when you heard it. Before you start work, get the dishes done. It's going to put you in that mode of actually getting things finished and getting something off of your list that you had to do already. And you're going to be thinking while doing dishes, because it's a mindless thing to do. You know, you put soap on your sponge and scrub. You'll start to think a little bit early before you get into work mode of what the first things you're going to do when you get into work mode. And so it works really well for being extremely productive. And I find it's a great way to just get into work mode and keep moving forward. That's my daily schedule. So I know I probably talked a little bit too long about that, but that's what it's like, and that's the way life is now. When the kids go to school in a couple of years, that it's going to change, and so I'll just have to adapt. And that's part of what being an entrepreneur is all about, and working from home is just being able to adapt to the situations around you and use the things that happen to you to your advantage. So that's really what it's all about. So great question, Shane. Thank you. And I hope, I hope that was insightful for everybody. I'm going to take a break really quick just so I can get my voice back, and I'll be right back. All right, I'm back. And all I can say is at least I don't have the hiccups anymore. Man, that was scary. But anyway, this is going to be the last question because I feel my voice going, and I do want to make sure I get this episode out this week for you. This is a question from Miranda, and it's a great one about being everywhere. As a lot of you know, I have a marketing strategy that has been titled Be Everywhere, meaning you got to be not only just promoting and publishing stuff on your website, but you should also have other external content platforms where you can reach larger audiences, and together as a whole, all these content platforms will lift your brand and to become a higher authority level. More specifically, having something like what Dana was talking about earlier, not only just a blog, but a podcast and a website. And there are other means of doing that, of course, you know, Amazon books and traditional books and webinars and things like that. But, you know, being everywhere. And so this is Miranda's question about being everywhere.
Hi, Pat. I'm Miranda O'Husky, and I'm in the process of relaunching my blog and brand at MirandaOHusky.com. My last name is spelled O-C-H-O-C-K-I. On your podcast, you often tell us listeners that we should be everywhere because each different place will reach a different audience. What I'm wondering is, how do we be everywhere without being repetitive? Is it okay to post similar but not exact content from a blog onto the different mediums? Or does each one need to be unique? And how unique is unique? Thanks for your help, Pat.
Hey, Miranda, thank you so much for the question. And best of luck to you on the rebranding of what you got going on there. Now, as far as uniqueness across all the different platforms that you have, I think it's important that they're each pretty unique. You know, they don't have to be 100% unique. I think it's okay to talk about the same topics and the same ideas, and perhaps even have a lot of the same messages and strategies and tips on the different platforms. However, I would recommend against having the exact same content on the different platforms. And the most common form that this is done in the Be Everywhere strategy is having a video done, taking the audio from that video, putting it into a podcast, and taking the transcript of that podcast or video and putting that into a blog post, meaning all three of those components, blog, podcast, and video, are all exactly the same content. They just are delivered in different mediums. Now, that is it's a strategy that a lot of people use, and it's a great way to put yourself on those different platforms. But I like to see the Be Everywhere strategy used in an authoritative manner, not as a content production manner, you know. And you know, yes, you are producing content on each of those different platforms, but you're producing unique content so that in whole your brand raises an authority level. I feel like if people see that you're publishing the same content on all these three different platforms, you know, that there's no benefit to going across to each of these different platforms. And yes, you'll have a few people in your audience who will only stick to one, which is why it's important to be everywhere, because there are some people that only read, there are some people that only view, and there are some people that only listen. But there are also people out there who will read, watch, and listen. And it's important for those people who will potentially become your super fans, who can really, really increase your reach, who will become customers for life and those types of things. It's really important for them that they're getting value, different value, from these different places that you have, these different platforms in your Be Everywhere strategy. But again, like I said, it doesn't have to be 100% unique. And a good example of this is something that I did fairly recently is I had my buddy Clay Collins from Lead Pages on the podcast. And that to date has been the most commented on podcast, almost 800 comments on that particular podcast episode. I'll have it in the show notes if you haven't listened to it. But not only did I have Clay on the podcast, but I had Clay on a webinar a couple weeks later, and some of the stuff overlapped, and we had mentioned that during the webinar, and it's important to do that, to be honest and upfront, just so people don't think that you're just rehashing the same information. But we sort of enhanced it. We added more information beyond what was in the podcast because we had a little bit more time. Excuse me. But we were able to show people what we talked about in the podcast. So if you think about it that way, that each of these platforms have different sort of capabilities to help your audience and serve your audience, you might be able to better create unique content for each of them. So I like to use the podcast, for example, to conduct interviews. I don't do interviews very often via video, and I hardly ever do interviews via text. I love the interview process via audio because it's really easy for people on the other end to do it. It's really hard to get good quality audio on the other end, it's really hard to get good quality video on the other end and have everything match up, and you know, it's just a mess sometimes. And plus the emails, you know, email interviews and things like that, it just seems a little bit informal, and you can never really get the right answers because you can't follow up with the questions that people answer through email. So that's why I like podcasts for audio interviews, although I do solo shows like this. And you know, there's something about the power of the voice, of course, and we've talked about that in the past. But think about video. If you're teaching somebody something, how to do something, a tutorial to how to use a particular piece of software, or maybe you're a mechanic and you're showing people how to install something in your car, that's hard. That, I mean, you could do that via text on your blog, and you could do that, I mean, I guess you could do that via audio, but audio, obviously, it'd be very difficult to follow. With text, it could be easier to follow, but video, it's just boom, right there. Do this, here it is. And so that's the approach I take with my different platforms. Each of them is used for specific different reasons. A lot of times, most of my videos are either replays of webinars, public speaking presentations, or tutorials to use how to use different pieces of software, and that's it. My podcasts are for solo shows that don't necessarily involve step-by-step processes where people need to see, and interviews. And then my blog is for, you know, a lot of other things, and you know, a lot of the smaller topics perhaps that don't lend itself to video or audio, or things that would just make sense to be completely text, you know, epic posts in that sort, where sometimes I combine all three. And so I hope that answers your question, Miranda. And for those of you out there who are implementing the Be Everywhere strategy, I mean, another person to look at is Derek Halpern. He's implementing the Be Everywhere strategy very, very well, probably better than I am right now. He has his blog where he has his content that he usually produces, but he has his Social Triggers Insider, his podcast, where he specifically brings on guests. He had Mark Echo on his show recently. I mean, these are huge names. I mean, imagine a Mark Echo email interview. I mean, those email interviews, though, they don't do much for me, you know, those text interviews. But an audio interview where I can listen to him, I mean, that was awesome. And then not only does he have those Social Trigger Insider podcast episodes, but he has his videos, which he's killing it on as well. And if you haven't seen some of the recent videos that Derek has done on Social Triggers, they're really good. And he obviously has a very, very unique style to what he does and what he teaches. I mean, he's from New York, but no offense to anyone in New York. I love New York. My dad's from New York, so you know, I'm not hating on you at all, but that's just his particular style, is that very New Yorker attitude. And I love it. I love it. His content is fantastic, and I'm eating it up, and I hope you will too. So he's putting different pieces of content onto these different platforms for things that lend itself to those specific platforms. So hopefully that makes sense. I'm at the 50-minute mark now. So Miranda, thank you for the questions. Thank you everyone else who asked the questions. And I apologize to those of you who have sent voicemails who I haven't been able to get back to yet. I am in the process of slowly answering these questions via the podcast and individually. So hopefully if I can get to you. If not, I apologize. But you know, my email and my contact form is always there for you if it's an emergency. And just thank you guys for listening. I apologize for the coughing and all that stuff, but you know, I really wanted to get this out to you. I'm trying really hard to stick to this weekly podcast episode because I know how much it means to a lot of you out there, and it means a lot to me out there to know that it means a lot to you out there, if that makes sense. A lot of meetups coming up. If I'm going to see you in the near future, I cannot wait. If I'm going to see you at Financial Bloggers Conference, I'm just so excited to do that opening keynote presentation for you. I've been preparing like mad for it. And of course, I'm going to be at NMX in January, New Media Expo, and I'm really excited about that one too. I got some things up my sleeve for that one. So if you're going to come watch my presentation, and yeah, just love you guys. Thank you so much. Thank you for helping get the SPI podcast past 1,000 five-star reviews. You guys are amazing. And if you haven't heard the end of episode 82 yet, I want you to take that challenge. I want you to take that challenge. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go listen to the previous episode, episode 82. Keep listening all the way to the end. I have a challenge for you that is going to change how you run your business and how you can serve your audience. So thank you so much. Here comes the outro music. I appreciate you. Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Passive Income Podcast at www.smartpassiveincome.com.
Entrepreneurs, what is the smart way to save when your growing business takes you on the road? Whether you're going to events or conventions or you're speaking somewhere, no matter what it is, you need to sign up for a free membership with Hertz Business Rewards. Yep, Hertz Rental Car created a program to help small and mid-sized businesses save money. Work trips, client meetings, industry conferences. With Hertz Business Rewards, you save at least 20% every time you rent a car. And you'll save on more than just the daily rate. Members earn credits redeemable toward free rental days, and it's also free to add an additional driver if any additional coworkers come along. And for those Gen Z entrepreneurs out there, no young renter fees. Plus, sign up for Hertz Business Rewards today and earn 3x credit during your first 90 days. These benefits add up to big savings that stack more dollars in your wallet. Join for free at hertz.com/businessrewards. Applies to base rate, taxes, fees, and options excluded. Additional terms and exclusions apply. Visit hertz.com/business rewards to learn more. Hey, I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you're looking for a new podcast to add to your rotation, I highly recommend Problem Solvers, hosted by Jason Pfeiffer, who's been on the show a few times, actually. As you probably heard in the credits, both our shows are on the Entrepreneur Podcast Network. On Problem Solvers, Entrepreneur's editor-in-chief tells the stories of real founders that solved real problems in their businesses, helping listeners get through any obstacles in their own ventures. And each episode is really distinct and easy to follow, and they're bite-sized too, usually around 15 to 20 minutes. And Jason pulls each story out himself so you can avoid the same crippling problems. Matt and I were recently on the show in episode 302, and Jason recently hosted a great episode on whether anyone can be too quote-unquote curious for a traditional career. Listen to Problem Solvers right now on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or Stitcher.